Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
David Eichel here for the Swarmcast, HawkeyeInsider.com. Pleased to be joined by Nathan King of our Auburn 247 site, host of the Auburn Undercover podcast. They do an absolutely tremendous job over there on the Auburn beat. So if you need anything Tigers related ahead of this week's matchup, be sure to go check out their site. Nathan, I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule, man. It's should be a fun week.
Yeah, for sure. Looking forward to meeting y'all, coming, making the trip all the way down. Of course, it's easy for us. I'm sure it's not a very easy, easy travel for you guys.
Hey, I got better attitude than the Houston head coach who wishes he was a 9 seed so he gets the home court advantage. But no, it'll be great to see you guys. But yeah, man, this is going to be a very fun matchup. I mean, the obvious Auburn to Iowa ties are apparent. Bruce Pearl was the assistant over at Iowa under Dr. Tom Davis. Helped recruit Kenyon Murray, actually, whose son, Chris Murray, is one of the breakout players in America this season. Iowa's leading scorer, first team All Big Ten. And then Matt Gaetans, Iowa assistant coach, worked under Bruce Pearl from 2017 to 2019. So, Nathan, you were there. Before we dive into the specifics, you were there for the press conference with Pearl shortly after the announcement. What was kind of his reaction to facing Iowa for, I think, the first time in his coaching career, actually?
Yeah, it's the first time, and it's the first time Auburn and Iowa have matched up. Funny enough, it's the first time they've ever matched up in football or basketball. And you would think over the years in, you know, one – you name it, Outback Bowl, Citrus Bowl, some SEC Big Ten tie, you'd think they would meet at some point. But yeah, it's the first time for him. Of course, like you mentioned, it was the last time he was an assistant coach. He said, you know, he kind of hit it off the bat in his press conference after Selection Sunday. He said, look, the Hawkeye State has a special place in my heart. You know, it's a place where he really sort of grew in his coaching career over the course of 7 years. Of course, you know, some good, some bad. You know, they had the infamous Illinois situation there. As well, but he has referenced Tom Davis, not even when they've had to play Iowa or having anything to do with Iowa, ever since I started covering this team. You know, that's one of, if not his biggest mentor, especially early in his coaching career. And so, you know, it's special for him to go against this team, especially in an NCAA tournament setting. And you also have the factor of, you know, this game's in Birmingham, which, you know, it's funny, last season when Auburn was a 2 seed. And they pretty much had their pick of, you know, they knew they were going to be in Greenville like the whole time, similar to how Alabama's known it's going to be in Birmingham forever. And, you know, fans kind of projected forward to next year and like, well, you know, if Auburn's good again, it'd be really fun to, you know, lock down Birmingham. Well, they had, quote, an off year. You know, they still went 10-8 in the league, but had an off season. And lo and behold, you still end up in Birmingham, where we were talking before we got rolling. You know, it should be a home crowd advantage for Auburn. At the same time, as you said, you're coming to figure out this rivalry between them and Alabama is pretty ruthless, and Alabama fans are definitely going to show up in black and gold. And I saw them on y'all's board, you know, learning some of the cheers and stuff like that. And it'll go the other way too. I don't know how much it'll matter for Auburn fans against, you know, Corpus Christi, where Bama will probably win by 40, but, you know, maybe in the second matchup against Houston, who knows. But or not Houston, sorry, whoever Bama gets in that whoever Bama gets in that second game. But you know, that obviously is the big break for Auburn, and I think that was the biggest reaction from Selection Sunday. This has been a team that in a lot of different ways has caught some bad breaks this season, not injury related necessarily, just a bunch of close games they haven't been able to close out. I mean, they should be, if a couple more, not even games, a couple more possessions go their way this season, they're like 12-6 in the league, 13-5, and they're like a top four team in the tournament. And so, you know, for this kind of a season to go into March Madness like this, catching a break where you play 2 hours down the road in Birmingham, a place you're very familiar with, I think it was a big sigh of relief for Auburn. I think they're very pleased with where they're going to play, and I think they're pleased with this first round matchup. Should be a good one.
It's going to be interesting too, and I like how you mentioned Auburn's probably a couple of possessions away from really flipping the script on the season. Iowa, it's almost the same thing. I mean, Iowa had a really big comeback this season. I mean, they started in Big Ten play 0-3. They lost to Eastern Illinois, which is the biggest upset by point spread in the past 25 years of college basketball. Iowa was, I think, 32.5-point favorites going into that game. They didn't have Connor McCaffrey. They didn't have Chris Murray. And it was probably the worst performance I've seen in the Frank McCaffrey era. But, you know, Iowa heading into the last game of the season against Nebraska, if they had beaten them, they would have been a 2 seed in the Big Ten tournament. I mean, that's how much of a hodgepodge the Big Ten is. And you look at Iowa, just a tale of two teams. I mean, they have not shot well, and their home and road splits are some of the most insanely different things I've seen ever. I mean, I think there are 4 or 5 different players that are shooting 10 or more percent less or worse from 3-point range on the road and neutral sites than at home. And nobody can figure out what the cause of that is. That's been really interesting to watch. But then you look at this Iowa team, they had a 21-point comeback against Indiana to get them their second win of Big Ten play. I don't know if you caught this, but the Michigan State game a couple weeks ago, Iowa was down 13 with 1.5 minutes left. They scored 24 points in that final 90-plus seconds, force overtime and win. That was, of course, the famous Fran McCaffrey, Kelly Pfeiffer stare down, which is a tremendous meme, by the way.
It's a great meme. I've used it several times already.
It's going to stick around for a while. But this Iowa team, it really – I don't know what Iowa team's going to show up. I mean, we watched them go into Assembly Hall and beat the bricks off the Hoosiers. And then we've seen them lose to Eastern Illinois. And Iowa's got some playmakers. But as you mentioned, I think this is going to be one of the more interesting and fun first-round matchups in the entire tournament, two contrasting styles. Auburn losing 9 of their last, I think, 13 games, but they're a much better team than I think their record indicates. They're 6th in 3-point percentage perimeter defense. And also, they're shooting the ball better from 3-point range, and that's a nightmare to Iowa fans' ears because they've allowed teams that typically don't shoot well from 3-point range to get hot against them. So I guess just give us the temperature of where this Auburn team sits right now.
Sure. Like you mentioned, 9 of your last 13 games were a loss for Auburn. It doesn't add up in the wins or losses, but 9 of their last 13 games were also against quadrant one opponents. Mm-hmm. And so there was a point where Auburn got off to a 5-1 start in the league. They beat up on South Carolina, beat up on LSU, you know, just absolutely dreadful teams. They were off to a 5-1 start. They beat a top 15 Arkansas team at home. They were feeling really good. Then of course they, over the rest of the season, Bruce Pearl kind of called it the back nine of their schedule, which ever since the schedule came out a year ago, you were looking at it and saying, man, that is brutal. Texas A&M twice, Tennessee twice, Alabama twice, Kentucky on the road. Just really, really brutal schedule. And as a result, Auburn hasn't put together back-to-back wins since that win at LSU and at South Carolina, since they were given, granted, they're on the road. It's always tough to win on the road, but since they were handed the two worst teams in the league in back-to-back games. And so, that obviously is a little bit, concerning if you're Auburn. You really haven't picked up much momentum over any course this season, really over the better part of the last month and a half. But at the same time, you would look at this team on paper and say, oh, Auburn's inconsistent. You just look at their record, and obviously 9 of the last 13, they've really been a pretty consistent team. They've played pretty well for the better part of the last month and a half. Again, the problem is they just keep playing some of the best teams in the country. We talked about before, they can't close out these games. They are, I've told people before, if you turn on Auburn any given possession in the first 35 minutes of most games, they look like one of the best teams in the country. They've played really, really well for the majority of games this season. Obviously, there's a couple exceptions. I think the best example is that they were up 17 at Alabama in the second to last game of the regular season. Bama has a big comeback. They end up winning in overtime. Auburn had three starters that were fouled out in overtime. That's going to make things pretty tough for you. But really just down the stretch, they've had leads at Vanderbilt. They led most recently this game against Arkansas. Like Iowa, Auburn lost on Thursday of its conference tournament. They led Arkansas with 41 seconds to go, had a huge comeback in the second half. They were down 15. There's a couple other leads I'm not thinking of. They had a shot at the end where they could have sent it to overtime against Tennessee. You know, they've just had a lot of situations like that, and the ball just hasn't bounced their way. And so getting a win over Tennessee on the last day of the regular season for them was massive. That put them in the tournament. You know, three quad one wins. Their non-conference schedule is really strong. They played six non-conference teams that made the tournament, which is really, really good for their strength of schedule, of course, and their resume. And so, you know, talking about, you know, people have kind of asked over the past few weeks, like in press conference settings and to players, and I kind of roll my eyes, you know, what's the confidence of this team right now? Like, it'll go up to like a senior who, you know, has been through this thing before. And, you know, players just keep reiterating, like, that's not the case with this team. They wipe the slate. This is a veteran team. It's got a lot of juniors, a lot of seniors. They know how to wipe the slate clean. And it, like, I want to tell these people, like, if you go to practice the next day, these dudes, they're just hanging out. Like, they're just having fun. They're just trying to enjoy the season. They are not like, oh man, we lost by another close game. Like, I mean, this is a team that's wiped the slate pretty well. And I think that's why this has been probably one of the better coaching jobs of Bruce Pearl's tenure, actually, even though it's a record that maybe Auburn fans, you know, wanted to be a little bit better this season. You still lost two All-Americans from last year, and you came back and you went 10-8 in the league with a bunch of players who pretty much the main rotation of this team last year, they were all just really good role players, and they've been asked to grow into bigger roles this season. And so I think that's probably the most impressive part of this team this season was, no matter the result, if it's a heartbreaking loss, if it's a big loss, if it's a close win, they pretty much approach every game the same. And the best example of that, they lost by 32 at Kentucky, just absolutely run out of the gym. The next game was when they almost beat the number 2 team in the country, Alabama, on the road. So they lock into the scout. It's a veteran team. Again, the biggest storyline has been this, them not being able to close out games at the end. And like you talked about, this is an 8-9 matchup. These are usually pretty close. Obviously, it's the closest possible matchup you can have in terms of a first-round game. This one should probably come down to the end again, and Auburn's going to need a better closeout in the last few minutes than they've had if they want to advance to the round of 32.
That's interesting that you bring up the closing aspect to that, because I would argue for Iowa, I think they've closed out games pretty well this season when they've had the opportunity. I think they've missed a couple opportunities when they went at Michigan State. They're down by 2. Peyton Sanford, who I think is one of the better shooters in the country, you'll look at his 3-point percentage, you'll kind of roll your eyes. But this is a guy, Nathan, that had 2 points in the first 3 Big Ten games. He went 0-for-20 to start. And then I think over the past 15 games, he's shooting 47% off the dribble from 3-point range. He's shooting 45% in general. This is a guy that will pull it up from the logo. I mean, he has Caitlin Clark range. I know it's not very rare that you bring up a women's basketball player with that sort of range, but she's probably the most famous athlete on Iowa's campus right now, maybe besides wrestler Spencer Lee. But Peyton Sanford's a guy that's not going to be afraid to launch 6, 7, 8 threes in a half against Auburn if they give him an inch of space. So I think part of this game also is going to come down to how is the game going to be called? And what I mean by that is Iowa typically, I think, has struggled, especially in their motion offense, when defenses are allowed to get very physical with them, when they can kind of push and grab them when they're coming off screens. The Big Ten allows a lot of that, which I think has frustrated Fran McCaffrey to the point of a stare down, among other things this season. But I'm very curious how the NCAA tournament is going to be called. And I'm not placing pre-blame on the officials. I'm just saying, are they going to allow that level of physicality? Because that really could determine the way Iowa tries to run its offense and maybe even the way they try to run its defense. Because if you look at Auburn's, you know, offense this season, I think this is going to be a game where Iowa's going to play a lot more zone than man, because I think Fran and company are going to sit back and say, okay, yeah, they've shot well the past couple of weeks, but if you look at the 3-point percentage on the season, Iowa's been pretty good on the glass this season. So they're just going to say, hey, you know what? We're going to make the Tigers prove that they can hit some 3-point shots against them. And if it comes down to that, they'll adjust the defense accordingly. Another thing I think I'm interested about, Iowa, despite being an undersized team, especially at the 5, they're a pretty good offensive rebounding team. I think they're 66th in offensive rebounding percentage. And I was surprised to see that Auburn, I think, is like 321st in defensive rebound percentage.
Yeah,
that's going to be something where if Iowa really gets going in that second chance category, that really could be the difference in the game. And I think Iowa's guards do a really good job of attacking the rim and rebounding some of their own misses. Tony Perkins, who I think is going to be the biggest X factor in this game. I think Chris Murray, I don't even think Chris Murray has to be the best player on the floor. I think Tony Perkins has to be the best player on the floor for Iowa if they want to achieve what they want to achieve. I think four of his last eight games, he's had 20-plus. The team just plays with so much more energy and confidence when he gets going. He gets the free throw line. He pulls up from mid-range. He finishes at the hoop. They run the offense through him. And when he gets going and is able to drive, you get Peyton Sanford open looks. You get Chris Murray open looks. Connor McCaffrey's proven that he's capable of making a few three-pointers. Patrick McCaffrey, you know, he's had a very up-and-down season. He missed six games this season. He took a personal leave due to anxiety. He's very forthcoming about his mental health and prioritizing that. And he kind of had a slow kind of return, but, you know, I think he hit six threes in Iowa's last game. So if he can carry that over into the NCAA tournament, I think that could be a difference maker. But I'm very, very curious how physical this game's going to be, because Bruce Pearl teams, I don't think, are one to lack physicality. I know some people call Fran's team soft. I really don't get where that notion comes from, because when you look on the glass and everything, I think they've been tremendous. But Auburn's perimeter quickness, if they're able to get into the lane and get Philip or Bracha in foul trouble, I think that could be a big key as well.
Yeah, maybe Bruce and Fran McCaffrey can chat a little bit before the game about some of their frustrations with officiating, because I mean, it's been the same way for Auburn this season. You know, Bruce Pearl will point to his starting front court, Jani Broome, who comes over from Moorhead State, was a second-team All-SEC pick at center. And then Jalen Williams is a senior, been a pretty efficient four-man for them this season, a guy who's grown over the course of his career. But those guys shoot a ton on the inside, and they really don't get fouled much very often. And so Bruce Pearl's been frustrated about that. You know, for Fran McCaffrey's stare down to kind of equal that, you have Bruce Pearl just losing his mind at the end of the Alabama game on the radio. And so, you know, maybe they can have some discussions a little bit about how they'd like this game to be called. Yeah. I mean, that's a big key for Auburn. It has been all season. I, you know, when I was comparing these teams in terms of their free throw rate on T rank, that was a big thing that stood out. You know, Auburn allows opponents to shoot a lot of free throws. Auburn is a very good defensive team. You know, they've been top 20 in KenPom defense like pretty much all season. That's what Bruce Pearl's teams usually hang their hat on, is defense first. Then when you get some three-point shooting going, that's when you have some of the better teams he's had. But, you know, defending without fouling has been an issue. When they don't foul, it's tough to score on them because they're, you know, they're so pesky on the perimeter. And then Broome is a pretty good shot blocker on the interior. And so, you know, they've got the good inside-out defense. Yeah, I mean, that has to be key in this game, in the games this season where it's been frustrating for Auburn. Defensively, you look at games at Texas A&M, at Vanderbilt come to mind. At the end of the Alabama game, you know, Bruce Pearl has talked a bunch about, look, people keep saying, and he keeps hearing people say, oh, you know, who's going to take the last shot in these close games? Who's going to get us a bucket at the end? He was like, I don't care about that. Get stops and don't send them to the free throw line. Like, that's how you close out games. And in the game they haven't been able to do that, that's been the formula for the other teams able to get a win there at the end. It's good that you bring up offensive rebounding too, because I think in addition to Iowa being a great offense and Auburn fans saying, all right, going to have to play good defense. When we talked to, you know, a little bit about some of their offensive rebounding, I think Auburn fans were like, oh man, not again, because that game against Arkansas, I think Arkansas had 14, they were plus 14 on the boards, like 8 minutes into the game. So Auburn got completely dominated on the glass. I think it finished a minus 18 margin. Arkansas had like seven offensive boards in the first half alone. And so, you know, Auburn isn't a dreadful rebounding team all the time, but when they are, it's just really difficult for them to play catch up in those games. That's how Arkansas got a 15-point lead in that game. And so, you know, I don't think Iowa is as athletic or lengthy as that Arkansas team, but at the same time, clearly, like you mentioned, they do a good job on the offensive glass. And so, yeah, I think Auburn has to keep Iowa from, you know, these couple factors that I look at least from an outsider's perspective in terms of their stats, in terms of their trends throughout the season. A couple factors where you're saying, if they do that, they've got a pretty good chance of winning. I was looking, you know, it's when they make eight or more threes, they're 13-2. So yeah, maybe keep them from, like you mentioned, just barraging from the 3-point arc. That's something you got to keep off the table. Offensive rebounding. If Auburn is in trouble, that's something definitely for Iowa fans too. Listening, definitely watch for that early. If Iowa's finding success on the glass in the first few minutes, Auburn has had a really tough time adjusting over the course of games. Although I, you know, I say that, and they came back against Arkansas. You know, they kept playing defense, and that's just that's what this team does. They have their issues, but they rarely get blown out. It was the Kentucky game. They just completely got knocked out of their game plan. And they lost by 12 at Georgia. That's pretty much it. Like that. Other than that, they have played every single game close. And it's been because of their defense. They kind of hunker down, even if they're down, 12, 11, 15, they just keep locked into their defensive game plan. Eventually it'll start working. Eventually they'll start making some shots. But rebounding and 3-point shooting, as basic as that sounds, I think that's absolutely correct. And then, like you mentioned, on the flip side, Auburn's percentages don't look great from the 3-point arc throughout the season. But like you talked about, if you look specifically, okay, how are you trending heading into March? For Auburn, it's on the upswing. They've done a good job shooting the 3-ball over the better part of the last 3 weeks. They've had guys on the roster whose percentages have been, 250, 260 on the year, have climbed well above 30% from deep. I think KD Johnson, who's kind of their sixth man, he's 50% from beyond the arc over his last 9 games. And so, certainly that's a good trend for Auburn. The 3-point arc on both sides is going to be something massive to watch, of course, in this game.
The foul rate's interesting that you bring up too, because I think Iowa, I need to double check it, but I think Iowa's made 55 more free throws than opponents have attempted this season. So Iowa's very good at getting to the free throw line, making people pay and not fouling. But if you look at Iowa's rotation specifically over the past month and a half, they're only playing 7 guys, which is 7, maybe 8, depending on the situation. And that will be interesting as well. But, the momentum-wise for March, I don't think it really matters for Fran McCaffrey's teams. And what I mean by that is I would argue, you look at last year, Iowa was a very trendy Final Four pick, which is kind of amazing considering they lost Luka Garza, who was the best player I've probably seen in college, at least since I started professionally covering college basketball. But Iowa was a top 5 offense, top 5 defense from February 1st onward. The only game they lost was to Illinois. Lost by 2. Iowa missed a game-winning 3 at the buzzer. And Iowa won 4 games in 4 days in the Big Ten tournament. And then when they got upset against Richmond, every shot was short. So I think they were still exhausted from the 4 games in 4 days. So I'm curious how Iowa comes out in this one. I mean, obviously they were a quick exit from the Big Ten tournament, but will that extra rest and sort of recovery time boost them to what they are capable of on offense? That's going to be my biggest question. But for you guys and for Auburn, what's maybe a storyline or an X factor, a player that's not being talked about enough going into this matchup? You mentioned Katie Johnson's hitting 50% of his threes for the past 9 games. I know I've seen you tweet about him, I feel like, more in the past month than I have the rest of the season, because as you mentioned, he caught fire. And obviously, Joni, I think, could be a huge, huge mismatch for Phillip. I think Phillip's done a really good job in a good league full of really, really talented big men. But he's unique, I think, in his play style, which I'm interested how Phillips get attacked. But what's something that maybe people aren't talking about or looking at enough?
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned before, that's probably the best example in terms of 3-point shooting, of not taking a holistic approach to a team's stats and saying, okay, how are they actually playing down the stretch toward the end of the season? I look at a guy like Jalen Williams too, somebody I mentioned before, a 4th-year senior. Guy who's probably going to take a 5th-year. I would imagine he's a guy who can make more money still playing in college and then, go overseas or something after that. Before the Arkansas game, I said it talking to Curtis Wilkerson, who covers Arkansas for 24/7. He was like, who are a couple X factors in this game? A couple X factor players. KD Johnson, he ended up having 20 points, and he was almost the reason Auburn won this game, because he's just, if he starts getting confidence, I don't know how many times you've watched KD Johnson play basketball. It's like one of the most fun college basketball players, because if he gets in his head that he's the best player on the floor, there's nobody who can tell him otherwise. It could be an incredible 3-point shot, or it could be charging headfirst to the rim with reckless abandon. It's the best.
Love it.
But Jalen Williams, they had gone more than a month before the Arkansas game in the SC tournament, more than a month between games where he had shot below 35% from the floor. He's got a nice, I don't know how good Iowa's defense off the top of my head is, right around the rim, but he's a guy, just kind of get it to him in the circle with his back to the basket. He'll turn right around. He's a lefty, really pretty floater that he just kind of flicks in there. I don't know what percentage he's shooting on floaters alone this season. It has to be like 70 plus. It's a really good shot for him. And so I bring that up to say he is one of these guys for Auburn. Look, they've won before when Wendell Green's had an off night. It's hard for them to win when Broom has an off night, but they've done it before. Alan Flanagan is a really good swing player for them, really good two-way player who's super bouncy and athletic. you know, he'll play good defense, make 1-3, shoot 1-for-5. They can still win those games. Jalen Williams, it's really tough because that's sort of your heat pump. You just kind of go to him in the middle and you're saying, if this offensive possession isn't working, you know, just flick that floater in there. You're really good at it. And so again, before the Arkansas game, they had gone more than a month between games where he had shot less than 35% from the floor. He had been above 35 for over a month. He goes 1-for-6 against Arkansas. They have a tough time getting their offense going. You know, that's an important paint touch for them. You know, they get a paint touch to Broome behind the basket. He's the best post player I've ever covered at Auburn. They just haven't, you know, Kessler just rolled to the rim. He was 7'2". Sure. Austin Wiley wasn't a great post player. And so he's got those post moves. When you mix him in with Jalen Williams and you're getting those paint touches, the guys have talked about over the last month, you know, we're like, how are you guys shooting the three ball better? They're like, well, we're getting it inside. Actually, it's less with what we're doing on the outside, but you know, we're trying to get one or two paint touches on every possession. And then a storyline, I don't know how much it's being talked about. I don't know how much, you know, people have sort of looked at this trend for Auburn, but they do a really good job of taking care of the ball, which I understand Iowa does pretty well on offense. It was interesting in, you know, people like to think of Auburn as this run and gun team because, you know, idealistically, like people think about the Jared Harper and the Bryce Brown Final Four run, like nationally, sure. That's people remember. They remember them, you know, rocketing up and down the floor, shooting three pointers on 3-on-1 fast breaks. Obviously it was hilarious. But this Auburn team, and really the way Bruce Pearl likes to run his offense, you know, they were playing really fast in non-conference play and they were turning it over a bunch, even early in SC play. They had 19 turnovers at home against Mississippi State. They took a couple practices to really implement this mindset. Stephen Pearl, the assistant coach, got on our podcast, talked about it at length, shoot the ball before you turn it over. Like they really put they put the e-brake on pretty much. Like
that's Fran McCaffrey's strategy as well. Yep. I think Bruce Pearl even said that in his presser, right?
Yes. Yeah. That has been a huge trend for this team. And now you look at, again, maybe the wins and losses don't, I'm not saying like, oh, they're 15-1 since then, but it's like, you just look at their offense. You're just talking about trends for this team that's keeping them in games. They've played the best competition in the country at times. You know, why have they come down to the wire on the road against Tennessee? Why did they lead Alabama by 17? You know, the turnovers in Tuscaloosa is like 8-1 at one point from Alabama to Auburn in the first half against Arkansas. How did they mount that comeback slowly over the course of like 10 minutes down 15? They only had 10 turnovers in that game. And so it's something where I find myself game in game again this season, looking at the box score afterward. And I'm like, oh, Auburn only turned it over 8 times. And it's like, it just starts to become a trend. Wendell Green has been very, very protective with the ball. He's a guy, point guards catch a lot of hate. He's caught a lot of hate from Auburn fans this season. You know, he's kind of under that microscope as the guy at the top of the offense. Yep. And he takes the last shots too, but he's done a really good job protecting the basketball. KD Johnson, as fun as it is to talk about how reckless he plays, and he is definitely a runaway locomotive. His turnovers from last year, way, way down. And so that's another trend to take a look at in this game. Again, if you're an Iowa fan, you're kind of looking for some stats early on in this game. If you've turned Auburn over, you know, 7 or 8 times in the first half, that's a really good trend because this team over the past month has only trended toward 10 or 11 a game.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, You transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I think Iowa getting out in transition is going to be absolutely massive in this game. Yep. We talk about the pace of play. I understand it, and it's an easy talking point, but the way Iowa's offense, at least after watching film on Auburn, the way Iowa's offense is going to get going is by getting in transition, getting easy buckets, and that'll lead to half-court success. I mean, I'm pretty confident saying that's going to be Iowa's strategy because sure. Iowa, when they get out in the open court, they are one of the best teams, I think, at least teams in transition in the country. I think Fran McCaffrey, I think there's a lot of Fran fatigue among the Iowa fans right now because they haven't made a Sweet 16 since 1999. But this is just an interesting stat I want to throw out there. Iowa has never been the benefit of a first-round upset. So when they make the second round, since 1999, they've always played the higher-seeded team. I think they're one of the only teams in the country that's happened to. But yeah, I mean, I think Iowa, I think their offense obviously is going to be the big talking point. I don't even think Iowa needs to play tremendous defense. I think they need to string together two great 4-minute segments and have their offense production going. And I think that'll be the big thing. And Connor McCaffrey even joked about it during the press conference where we try to get him to describe this year's team. And I mentioned earlier, it's such an up and down team. He goes, we need to get better at playing with a lead. Like, we need to have this underdog mentality when we have a lead, because the reality is he couldn't even explain how they came back from 21 down against Indiana, how they came back against Michigan. They were down, I think, 7 or 8 with under a minute left. Peyton Sanford had a 4-point play, had another 3 in that segment. Obviously, the Michigan State comeback, one of the most miraculous comebacks, I think, probably in Big Ten history. It's a weird team. I don't know what Iowa team's going to show up in Birmingham. And I'm pretty sure you can say the same thing with Auburn. What version of the team are we going to see down the stretch? And Auburn's a veteran team led by, I think, a tremendous coach. Iowa has a very, very veteran team as well. I mean, you look coming down their lineup, these have been guys who have been around the block. Connor McCaffrey probably and Phillip are probably the one of the oldest senior classes in the country. I think they're 25 and 24 years old. So, I mean, they've seen it all. I won't ask you for a score prediction. I think we need to save that for our game previews. But I guess just any final thoughts about the matchup in itself. And I'm not just hyping up this game because we're covering it. I really do think this is going to be one of the more underappreciated first round matchups. Like,
yeah,
the connections, the contrasting styles, everything. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
No, I think so too. And I think there is a lot of potential, like we talked about, for a really venomous environment, which is interesting to say, talking about going to Birmingham, I think Iowa fans will maybe take a little bit of, pleasure in knowing that Alabama fans will be there to back them up. And then when that happens, Auburn fans will go even harder in that direction. And so I think this has the potential to be, if it's a close game down the stretch of the second half, this is going to be, Auburn fans are not going to be happy with the Alabama fans in the building and vice versa. And I know Iowa has a great fan base in all sports. And so that should just be awesome to see these teams come together. You know, like we talked about, I think, looking at KenPom, offense versus defense, this is one of the better matchups in the first round when you're looking at, obviously, the number. This is the best offense Auburn's played all season if you're just looking at the adjusted efficiency. And then, like I mentioned, I'm not sure where Auburn's at. I think 22 maybe in defense right now. But if you're just looking strictly at those numbers, it's one of the better ones you're going to get in the first round. And so something has to give at the end of the day. I'm glad you brought up pace. That's something Bruce Pearl talked a lot about. Of course, I just mentioned Auburn kind of putting the e-brake on offense. You know, it's been the same for their defense. They would love to get you in the half court. I think they finished number 3 in the SEC in shot clock violations forced during the season. That stat doesn't really mean that much. It's just sort of a way to display what they like to do and how they're able to sort of stretch teams out over the course of 35 seconds. Not getting easy shots. You talked earlier about the number 6 3-point percentage defense in the country. I'd say half of that is because the SC is dreadful at shooting threes this year. Like, just look at Auburn. I think they finished 10th in the league in 3-point shooting, and they were 340.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like,
so most teams they've gone against have been pretty bad. But on the other side, you know, it is a good perimeter defense. Zepp Jasper is a name for Iowa fans to know. He'll probably score 2 points in this game. Not an aggressive offensive player. Doesn't do very much. If I'm a basketball player checking in and he's guarding me, it would just be terrible. I mean, he doesn't let guys dribble inside the 3-point line. I've seen like a 6'10 guy try to back him down the post. He's a 6'1 off guard, and like he just doesn't move. It's like he's made out of concrete. And so you know, Auburn's got a couple of those guys. Alan Flanagan can defend like that when he's on. Obviously, Broom is a good defender around the rim, and so that's been their calling card all season. When it doesn't work, it's really hard. That's what they talk about at the end of the day. They're like, look, we just got to defend and rebound. Like, we can talk about all these other factors, you know, in a given matchup. But they're like, if we defend and rebound, we play our game on defense, that ends up being a good thing for them. So I am interested too, from your perspective, you know, talking so much about the pace, when teams have been able to slow Iowa down, kind of how have they done it? Because what you just mentioned is a nightmare for Auburn fans to hear, because get out in transition, you know, get three balls in transition, get easy shots in transition. That is what Arkansas did, and that is what Kentucky did when they lost by 32 in Rupp Arena. So when Auburn can keep things from doing that and keep it at their pace, they've got a really good chance in these games. So, you know, I wonder what would have kind of been some factors when Iowa hasn't had success, you know, pushing the ball this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it is long possessions by when Iowa plays on defense. Look, I think the reality is Iowa's zone defense, I think schematically, is flawed. I think you have their big man, whether it goes back to when they had Luka Garza, they have to cover almost corner to corner. They're closing out corners way too much, leaves just nobody in the paint. I think teams in general have done a really good job of, when you don't allow Iowa to get out in transition, forced Iowa to play long defense possessions, not even taking the first shot. I think that just inherently frustrates Iowa. Then Iowa gets so sped up and they try to make up ground for it, that actually slows the game down because they're going to force a quick shot. If it's a miss, well, guess what? They're playing another 25, 28 seconds on defense. If Iowa gives up offensive rebounds, I think that inherently frustrates them as well, because the longer possessions are just going and not taking the first available shot, I really think just inherently that's going to press Iowa a little bit. Because the reality is, I think Iowa is happy to give up 2 points very quickly, because Iowa's mentality is, we are going to outscore you. We are going to outrun you quick, boom. Okay, guess what? We'll force a shot up in the first 5 or 6 seconds if we give up an easy two. Okay, Iowa just banged a three from the corner, right? So that's Iowa's whole mentality is, it's not even so much about the points they give up. It's just about how much time and energy are they wasting on the defensive end. And that's how you inherently slow the game down for them. If that makes sense. I just think the running multiple plays in the same set, in the same half court, not being in a hurry to get out in transition. Another way for teams that have done it, if they have an opportunity to get out in transition, they still won't do it. They have an easy 2-on-1 break. They'll just wait, get the offense set up, get the half court set up, when Iowa would probably rather just have them go out and score in a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2. So just forcing the game to go longer is really inherently frustrated Iowa, because they are so run and gun. Now, look, they're not going to sit there and launch a three every 3 seconds. There's certain lineups where, if you look at like a Patrick McCaffrey, Peyton Sanford, Chris Murray, you have Phillip in the paint, and maybe Tony running the point, I'll be surprised if there's not a shot up in the first 11 seconds, 11 to 12 seconds. They are always in attack mode. There's a different set of plays and they run a different style of offense at that point. And again, if a guy to watch for in transition, which can really be a big energy booster, I mentioned in Peyton Sanford, if you get a 3-on-2 break with him and you leave him open at the top of the key, he will pull up from the logo 8 times out of 10. That's just the way he's wired. And I think Fran does a great job of instilling that confidence and giving him the green light to be able to do that. Because if it hits, the energy is just going to be unbelievable from the Iowa bench. And that translates to them playing better defense. Like, Iowa's best defense is them being tremendous on offense. That's at least what I've seen from them this season.
Yeah. And for Auburn on the other end, talking about keeping up with Iowa, effort and energy is the key words for Bruce Pearl. That's what he talked about all season long. That's why they said they got behind against Arkansas. They have a deep lineup. Yeah, they do go 10 guys deep. They have a walk-on who plays 8 minutes a game in SEC play. And so know, they do have a deep lineup, and Bruce Pearl's expectation there is, look, if you're in the lineup, you better be given 100% on defense. And you'll see it if you watch Bruce Pearl, if you watch Stephen Pearl too, it's kind of fun to watch them, you know, go back and forth and Stephen kind of take his cues from his dad. But, you know, if there's not a good closeout on a three, and the only reason for that is you didn't run fast enough, they will lose their minds. And just because that's how this defense is predicated. Like that's where they get, they don't have the best athletes in the world on this team. This is not one of Bruce's most talented teams, but it is a veteran team where he's going to expect you to run your gas out, you know, every single possession. And so, you know, that matchup again, it's just a true offense versus defense game. And you know, I'm going to go back to how many three pointers Iowa can make. That stat for me just really stuck out this week, 13-2 in games where they make eight or more. So if you're Iowa and you start getting rolling early on in the game, you make four or five in the first half, that's going to be a really good sign. I hope we get to see, as Pritchard, who's likes to pull up from the
Peyton
Pritchard.
No, you were thinking of the Oregon guard, the Oregon.
I was. Yes, it's Paul. Apologies, Mr. Sanford. But Wendell Green, when he gets hot, he'll do the same thing. And so maybe we'll get a little exchange of them just, you know, throwing haymakers from the logo over and over again over the course of this game. Yeah, I'm with you. I think this has an opportunity to be one of the better games in the first round. And yeah, I agree. It's not just because I'm covering it. I would definitely be tuned in for this one because all the connections are there. And I think it has all the makings of a game that'll come down to the final minute.
I can just hear all the Iowa fans like screaming in my ear about like you when you said Bruce Pearl will get after him by not doing a proper closeout. I can just hear Iowa fans being like, why can't Iowa adopt that mentality? Because they've just seen so much. Yeah. There's times where Iowa will go, they'll chase down the corner three and they won't put a hand up. And you just, Iowa fans are sitting back like, cool. Great closeout, yeah. Guys. They'll give up a three.
Bruce, BP doesn't take a lot of timeouts, but sometimes when he does, it's just to grab one player and say, you better not do that again or you're not playing the rest of the game. And he coaches the freshmen really hard too. He coaches the young guys really hard, and he lets them know that ahead of time. But yeah, you know, it's funny, like that you know, it got a lot of traction with Alabama fans, but Bruce Pearl at the end of the Alabama game, he was on the radio and basically, you know, was screaming about the officiating and then threw down the headset. It was funny to watch people be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he did that. And then all of us who like, you know, like we're in the building every day, like we go to practice, we're like, that ain't nothing. Like y'all have heard nothing. Like, that is the most tame response possible. I mean, they all feed off that. Again, it's not the most talented and athletic team he's had. They don't have the number three overall pick that can get you a shot anytime. They don't have the best defensive rookie in the last like 5 years of the NBA, you know, just blocking 10 shots a game. So it comes a lot from effort. And being locked into the scout.
It's funny. Last quick thing, we'll wrap this up, but you mentioned Bruce Pearl being tame and everybody thought he lost their mind. I'm not going to lie. Being behind Fran McCaffrey's bench during the COVID season was an unbelievable experience because an empty arena,
yep,
right behind the bench, you're hearing what Fran's saying, and oh, it's just look, Fran. I get Fran gets a bad rep. Fran's been always really good to me. I think a lot of the local media as well. But like, it is so funny. Just like, I don't know if you can attest to this. Like, he's such a, like, Fran's a good guy to just kind of pick his brain, and when you really get him going, he will go. But then right when you see the coaches just get locked into a game, it's just like a flip of a personality. It is just the most insane thing. And the way I've always tried to attribute it, and I know Bruce Pearl can be really intense too. I mean, I've seen him on the sideline. There's a reason why they're mentally wired like that, and that's why they're there. It's because they do allow themselves to be wired in such a way that allows them to be so ingrained in what they're doing. Does that make sense? You kind of know what I'm trying to get at here.
Yeah, I mean, like people would be surprised, and I don't think they, obviously Auburn fans know, but you know, Bruce Pearl kind of gained this reputation. You know, he joked that he loves that coaches can just wear the polos or like quarter zips now because he, you know, you'd sweat through it. He would sweat through every blazer and take it off middle of the game. So like that's his reputation. But then, you know, if you really watch over the course of the game, like there's some time, you know, it's just that coach's mentality of like, you know, looking at how do I need to coach in this exact moment? Because there are some timeouts where like, man, Stephen Pearl and Wes Flanagan, you know, the assistants, like they'll just be reaming these guys a new one. And then Bruce will get the whiteboard and he's like, all right, guys, clearly we didn't run the set very well. Like, it, like, you just got to have that yin and yang. And so, like, you know, just everyone who thinks Bruce is one way, it's interesting to, like, you know, like you said, have watched them so closely for so long, and knowing that, you know, they're capable of flipping whatever switch they need to over the course of a game. Like, he can sweat out of a suit, or he can grab a freshman and be like, now listen, we've worked on this in practice before, you know, like making sure you know how to coach in each situation.
It's like hold their hand and just get him across the bridge, right?
I watched him. They have a freshman named Trey Donaldson, who's a three-star point guard who's played at Tallahassee. He's their backup point guard. He'll give him like 11 minutes. He's got great hair. He's got like almost like the Elfrid Payton hair. It's just kind of like really, yes. He's got like the big, Bruce like leaned down to him on the bench earlier this year and was grilling into him because he's a freshman. He made some freshman mistake. And then he like nodded. He's like, okay. And then he roughed up his hair like he was a dog. And then he walked off. It was one of the best moments of the season. So yeah, this is definitely like last year when Auburn played Miami. Like, of course, like Jim Larrañaga and George Mason. Like, I was really young when they made that run, so I didn't have a ton of respect ahead of time. Didn't know a lot about Jim Larrañaga. But afterwards, I was like, man, this guy's awesome. He's a great coach. And so I'm excited for the same experience with Fran McCaffrey, you know, obviously a very well-revered coach. Excited to get around Iowa's program this week and see what he's about, because obviously, you know, Bruce has so much respect for him, and he's been one of the better coaches in college basketball.
It's interesting, too. I know I've kept saying final point, but final point about the stare down, the behind-the-scenes thing that people really don't know about, and Fran kind of opened up about this to Jeff Goodman when he did his kind of after, you know, as after podcast late at night. Fran just said, look, I knew if I said one more word, I was getting thrown out. It could have been, I love you, and I was getting thrown out. But he said, I wanted Kelly to know I was still engaged and I was still there and I'm still going to, you know, be all in this game. I don't care if we're down by 10. And that's why he said, I was just letting him know, like, I'm still here. I'm not going to say a word to you. And it was just very interesting to kind of hear the – now, like, I don't know if that was actually his thought process, but, like, it's amazing just to hear if that is his thought process that, like, okay, because you see him do that. I think it was, like, an 18-second stare down. And Kelly Pfeiffer stepped up to him too. Let's be real about that. I was shocked when he actually did that. It's like an old Western shootout type vibe. But then he goes right back in and draws up two plays that led to 2 3-pointers. Then obviously Iowa somehow came back and won that game. But it's just the antics of college coaches never get old. And I was so upset I wasn't there. I was at a bachelor party, the first weekend game I've missed in 5 years, and I missed the great stare down. I was just like, ugh.
That's a good reason.
It was.
I imagine like a little bit of that is, I mean, because every fan base hates officiating. Like, I mean, it's a rite of path. Every call is against your team. Like, obviously.
Yeah.
I imagine a part of it. Like, I think this has been the case with Bruce as well. Like, you know, make your fan base feel vindicated a little bit. Like, if you're not on the officials, they're going to wonder why you're not on the officials. They had a play. Florida is an early SEC game. But we were all like, what is this guy doing? I can't remember which clown official it was, but it's telling Wendell Green to like back off somebody, and he like kind of stares him down, and he's talking real close to him, and then as Wendell's kind of walking off, he's still like staring him down, and we're like, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are you
I remember that clip, actually. I did see that.
And Bruce comes up to the official. He like grabs Wendell by the shoulder, and he's like, hey, what are you doing? Get off of him. Like, so I think part of it is like just that vindication of like, the fan base is looking at this official. They're obviously very mad at this official. I'm going to make sure that they know that I am on their side. I'm on the side of our players as well. That was a great, obviously not as good as the Iowa stare down moment, but it was very strange. He like followed him to the bench, some sort of intimidation thing. I'm like, what are you doing? And Bruce wasn't having any of it. He came over and grabbed Wendell and pulled him away. He's like, dude, get off my guy. Like, get off this college student. Like, what in the world are you doing? So surely all the officiating will be great.
Oh, absolutely. Surely. I've always told people, if you don't know the official by name, you're fine.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
So, Nathan, I appreciate it. This went a lot longer than I anticipated, but I think we got a lot of really good stuff here. Everybody, be sure to stay tuned to Auburn 24/7 sports site for everything Tigers related. They put out a ton of good preview stuff already. They have a fantastic staff over there. And Nathan, look forward to chopping it up with you in Birmingham.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it.
We'll be right back. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.